Welcome back into Hawks Huddle, episode 9 here. Jacqueline Kula, I'm Mark Haskinet, and we are super excited today, Jacqueline, joining us on the podcast. Giants legend, NFL legend, really, when you think about it, two-time Super Bowl champion, Carl Banks. We dive into a lot of things with Carl, so it's definitely an interesting interview. A lot of things happening in the NFL, and just a super nice and really interesting guy Carl Banks is. So that will be the show for today, and the Carl Banks interview will be on the other side.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Hawks Huddle. We have a very, very special guest joining us right now. He is a two-time Super Bowl champion, Pro Bowl linebacker. He was a part of the Big Blue Wrecking Crew and a New York Giants legend. Welcome to the show, Mr. Carl Banks. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, thank you. So this is super cool for us. You can probably tell if you're watching this to our viewers or listeners, I'm a huge Giants fan. I got Saquon jersey here, Eli jersey here, Giants helmet. So this is super, super cool. My dad grew up a Giants fan. He loved you. So I know he's so excited to watch this. And Mark here, you're a Jaguars fan, but you're still hyped for
this. Yeah, I'm a Jags fan, but I really liked watching just highlights and stuff of obviously the legendary teams you were on, Carl. My dad's a big Bills fan, so I want to get into Super Bowl 25 and obviously the big game that was with you a little bit later. But like I said, great to have you on. And we'll start this here, Jacqueline.
Yeah, so I guess the first thing we want to talk about, because it's kind of fresh in our minds, is the Eagles-Washington game. I know you had some things to say about that. We had our opinions being just fans, but as a former player, what do you think about what happened?
Well, let me just say, just from a raw emotion standpoint, and someone who's played the game with a great deal of integrity and has always had coaching that tried to do it the right way, I thought what happened in that game, irregardless of what the outcome would do to benefit the Giants, in their opportunity to enter the playoffs, has nothing to do with it. It was more about, you know, the men that I share a fraternity with having their best chance to win taken away from them. And, you know, as I spoke on it, I can only speak on, you know, coaching decisions as I saw them. And I don't know if this was a decision that was made solely by the coach, or if it were a decision that was made from management above. But I know for a fact that if your quarterback, Jalen Hurts, is your best opportunity to win a football game, and you're within 3 points of tying that game, you don't take him out and say you want to see the other guy play. The reason you don't do that is because everyone on that team, every player on that Eagles team, knows exactly what the backup quarterback is capable of. And they're out there fighting their hardest just to see their opportunity to win a football game taken away from them.
Exactly. And I guess that was sort of our opinion on it, Carl. I mean, the team is out there, the players are out there trying to win. And it seemed like the only person who wasn't was Coach Peterson. And he faced some consequences. So is that when people say, well, the Giants should have won more than six games, it's not a matter of the Giants. It's a matter of what happened in that Eagles game and their decision.
Right. It's a matter of the integrity of the game. Right. And the guys who play this game know it. Now, folks on the outside will say, well, teams do this all the time. They wanted to see another guy. That's not necessarily the truth. Teams that want to see other players, if you wanted to see the other quarterback, then what you do is you start him. You start him for the game. You say he's going to start the entire game. But when the game is in the balance and you make a move like that, it sends an awful message to your team.
It sure does.
Right.
It
sure does. Yeah, that's for sure like what we were talking about. Just not even that the Giants didn't make it, because maybe we just didn't deserve to as the Giants, but it was just what we watched. And for the viewers and for Eagles fans to watch that, it just wasn't right in our opinion. So I guess, you know, we have very similar takes on it. I guess moving on now from last week, for from a few weeks ago, now we're in the playoffs, so much different now. We want to talk a little bit about you being a Giants legend. As we said, super cool. We want to talk a little bit about your upbringing. So how did you even start playing football? Was it, you know, were you put into it? Did you see some people playing it? You wanted to join?
It's so interesting because I didn't have a lot. I had a cousin who played football, but when I was 8 years old, we moved to a new neighborhood, and I'm out like on a walk, and I see all of these kids my age wearing these uniforms and practicing. And so I went up to the coach and I asked the coach, I says, how much does it cost to join the team? And the coach said, it doesn't cost anything. You just have to have your parents sign a permission slip. So I went home super excited, and I asked my parents if I could. I think I was like nine or 10. And I asked my parents if I could join the football team. And my father said to me that if he allowed me to play, that I had to promise him that I would wear all the proper equipment all the time. And at that time, it required wearing this very uncomfortable athletic cup in a jock strap. And so it's a protective thing, but it was so uncomfortable, but I guaranteed my father that I'd do it, right? And I would say halfway through the year, every day before practice, my father would do an equipment check to make sure I wore my athletic cup, right? And I walked out one day thinking I could leave it home. And my father did the equipment check and he saw that I was not wearing the cup. He went to practice with me and told the coach that I could no longer play because I could not wear the proper equipment. And you talk about heartbroken, oh my gosh. But it was a lesson, right?
Of course.
I ended up, we worked it out, right? And, you know, I cried and I begged and, you know, my father allowed me to do it. But I think he was teaching a lesson about taking the game serious and doing it the right way. And my father had never played football. He played some baseball, but he understood the importance of doing things right. And so I stayed there. I was taught, you know, some of the greatest lessons ever in life and about how to approach the football game from my Pop Warner coach. His name was Roosevelt Haywood. And he used to teach us about tackling and doing things the right way and why, if we don't do it the right way, it could cause us to get injured. And, you know, as a 10-year-old, 9-year-old, these things stick, you know. It was like he was scaring us into doing it the right way, but we were one of the best schools, Pop Warner football teams around in the city. And so that is what really inspired me to really pursue football. And I played every position. He made sure that every kid on the team got a chance to play quarterback, receiver, tight end. He just gave us an opportunity to do a lot of different stuff. And as you know, as time went on and I entered middle school and high school, I was, you know, starting to kind of find a position. So it was, you know, offensive tackle, defensive end. In junior high school, they let me play a little bit of quarterback, which was fun. But then I got to high school and, you know, the city started to merge different middle schools together. So you could see the talent levels were different. And so I was obviously no longer a candidate to be a quarterback. But, the position for me by the time I got to high school was defensive tackle and offensive tackle, because I was one of the bigger guys. And I wasn't very big, but I was one of the bigger guys. And so that is where I settled. But my first love, by the time I got to junior high school, was basketball. I thought I would be, you know, a superstar basketball player. I was really good. I was an all-state basketball player and a blue chipper. But football, I excelled at equally. But, you know, for me, it was just, I just thought I'd be a great basketball player. And the irony of all of that is I was a highly recruited football player because I was such a good basketball player. Because, you know, at 210 pounds, there was no future for me as an offensive lineman at a college level, or a defensive lineman for that matter.
Right.
But, you know, my athleticism on the basketball court allowed football coaches to really imagine me as either a tight end or as a linebacker. And, you know, was recruited very heavily across the nation. And I settled on Michigan State because Magic Johnson told me it would be the best school for me. And I had become friends with Magic at a basketball camp. He was part of my visit to Michigan State, and there were so many other schools that were better in terms of their record and in terms of being a powerhouse. But he said that the experience at Michigan State will be the best experience that I will have as a college student. And he was not wrong. I mean, the football experience wasn't great. We had a lot of games when I was there, and I ended up with three different coaches, but it all worked out well. Because I was an all Big Ten player, the first in the history of the school that was a non-kicker to be all Big Ten for three straight years. I ended up being the number three draft choice in the NFL draft, the number three pick in the NFL draft. And, you know, so it all worked out great for me. And I just am so grateful for the opportunity to have great coaches throughout my entire career as an athlete, and people that really cared about the game, and that kind of shaped, you know, how I approached it, and kind of in an odd way was contributing to my feelings on what I saw in that Philadelphia game as well.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. I think what you're saying, really, you're talking about that integrity that you mentioned in that first answer when you were talking about the Philadelphia game. I want to get into your Giants career. That was a great recap of your college career there. But Carl, did you get any interest by schools in basketball? Did you get offered?
I did.
Yeah.
I absolutely did. I got interest. They weren't big schools. They were Division I, but not the big powerhouse schools. Right. And My high school coach was telling me, he said, listen, you can go play basketball, but I'm telling you, my high school coach was both my football coach and my basketball coach. He said, but I'm telling you, you're going to be a great football player if you go to college to play football. You're definitely good enough to play in college in basketball, but football is where you should be. And so I took his word for it. And again, great.
It worked out. Yeah.
Right. So I do want to talk about you getting drafted by the Giants. So you were picked third overall. And I believe you said in an interview that you had no idea that you were even getting scouted, really. And Parcells was pretty much secretly scouting you because no one really knew you too well. And he didn't want anyone to find out about you. Right.
Yeah, so as the story goes, you know, because I was not on a powerhouse football team, and so guys that went to Texas and Florida and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, Ohio State, Michigan State, those were the guys that you really read about. And keep in mind, too, this is pre-social media. Mm-hmm. This was basically people that wrote in magazines three times a year, preseason, end season, and postseason rankings of player. Yeah. And so, you know, going into my senior year at Michigan State, I would be reading about all of these guys. And, you know, I've seen them on TV. And these were the top linebackers in the country. And then, you know, during the season, I'd get the magazine and I see those same guys as the top, you know, rated linebackers in the country who are so good and projected to be these pros. And then the postseason, same thing. And then when it came time for the All-Star games, the Senior Bowl and the Blue-Gray game, the Hula Bowl and East-West Shriner, I wasn't invited to any of those games. And so it would be pretty hard for a team to really, you know, pro scouts to really see how I stacked up against some of the bigger name guys. And so my college coach, George Perlis, who was part of the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff with their Super Bowl teams, he said to me, you're good enough to be a pro and you're one of the best linebackers in the country. He said, but here's how you can get on everybody's radar. He said, there's a game that a lot of these players won't be going to because it's on Christmas and it's in Birmingham, Alabama. And, but you can go to this game because pro coaches will be coaching that game and you can literally show them how good you are. And so he said, and if you are the player that I know you are, you'll go to this game, you'll perform. And by the time you get home, you'll be invited to the NFL Combine. You'll be invited to all the other All-Star games. So I went to that game. I was the MVP. And true to his word, he called me into his office and he showed me every invitation to the Senior Bowl, to the Blue-Gray game. I'm not Blue-Gray, the Senior Bowl, the Hula Bowl, in the East-West Shriner game and the NFL Combine. And so this is where all the other big-time players would be. And so I got invited to the Senior Bowl. And, you know, Bill Parcells had known about me from the Blue-Gray game. But because he was the guy who recruited and drafted Lawrence Taylor, everybody knew that he knew what he was looking for. And they wanted to find their next Lawrence Taylor. So Bill Parcells tells the story of how when I was at the Senior Bowl, he would watch me from a distance because everywhere he went, if he was looking at defensive players, all the other coaches and scouts would follow him. Yeah. And so he didn't want them to know that he was interested in me. And so he just kind of scouted from a distance and he kept it a secret that he was interested in me.
Wow. So what was it like getting that call? Just being told, hey, you're coming to the Giants, third pick overall.
Actually, it was very weird because I didn't know a lot about New York and the Giants other than Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson. But then when he called me and told me he drafted me, I did a little research. I'm like, wow, they got four all-pro linebackers already.
Yeah. You know? Right.
But, you know, me being kind of the idealist that I am, and so I'll take a coach at his word. And that call came, and it was as brief a conversation as you could have on draft day. He says, hey, this is Coach Parcells. We drafted you, and I didn't draft you. And he said, I didn't draft you to sit you on the bench, I was like, okay. And I took him at his word for it.
Wow.
And so I got there and I introduced myself to Lawrence and Harry. And Harry Carson looked at me and said, so what the hell are you going to do to get on the field? And I'm like, whoa, welcome to the big leagues. But it all worked out well.
Yeah, it sure did. So that was kind of the first time you met Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson. That was their first kind of words to you.
Yeah, it was my very first encounter. And so I was just kind of like, well, I'm gonna just have to show them.
Exactly. I wanted to ask, because you talked about Parcells there. How valuable was it playing under Bill Parcells and, of course, Bill Belichick being the defensive coordinator of those Giants teams? I believe you played with him near the end of your career in Cleveland as well. Just how valuable was it to go into the league, having them scout you and then teach you all the tools?
Well, it's so interesting because it's graduate school. When you play for a Bill Parcells and a Bill Belichick, they are teachers more so than they are coaches. Right. So everything about what they did was about proper fundamentals and making sure that you understood the game, not just for what you do, but every other position on the defense, every other position on the offense, understanding how offenses call plays, understanding situations, and understanding how you fit in those situations. So it was a really good experience for me in learning football, and it shaped me in how I view it and how I talk about it on the radio and in my broadcasting career, because I kind of understand football at a very, very, very high level.
Right.
Would you ever go back into football and coach, because Belichick may need another guy to help him out, or Giants need someone? Do you ever think about going and coaching, being a linebacker coach maybe?
I thought about it quite a bit, and but that ship has sailed now. But I did go and help both Coach Parcells and Coach Belichick in some of their training camps over the years after I retired. But I just have my business interests are just too demanding for me to say that I want to coach, because coaching is a full-time job and all the other interests I have take up a lot of my time, and I just couldn't commit to it.
I see. So I do want to talk a little bit about your business. So you have a huge career after football, which I do want to talk about that as well, of what you want to tell players. But so you're in radio broadcasting as well, and you also have the business with G3. And how did that all start? Like, were you kind of thinking, like, during your career, hey, what can I do to still, you know, have a career out after football?
Well, my post-career started the day I walked into the locker room at the Giants. I'm a communications major, and I thought for sure after college I'd be working for an advertising agency writing commercials, to be honest with you. But when you look at, you know, the college career that I had, which was excellent, but I was never on winning teams. And so I never took anything for granted. So when I got into the Giants and I got into the NFL, I started to look at, you know, where my opportunities could be post football. And one of the things I did that's now a standard practice, but I was a guy that had his own radio show as a player. I used to do a pregame and postgame show. My postgame show, I'd go up to the radio booth immediately after a game, win, lose, or draw, and do an hour of radio on the postgame. And, you know, I went out and I got a sponsor from Coca-Cola, and they sponsored it. And I just, it just became like the Carl Banks show. And now you see a lot of that, but back then it wasn't a lot of that. And so I did that, which helped me lay the groundwork for being on the Giants broadcasting team after I retired. But then the other part of it too is, you know, I had a, pardon the pun, passion for fashion. And I was a guy who wore starter apparel. I was one of their spokespeople, and I wanted to be that guy. David Beckerman was the chairman and CEO of Starter. And I'm like, wow, when I grow up, I want to do this. I want to have this type of business. And so I started, you know, 2 years into my career developing apparel that wasn't available, which was leather jackets. I developed NFL leather jackets as kind of my entree into the sports apparel business, with the goal of being everything, being able to do all types of products. And so doing big and tall leather apparel led to me being regular size NFL apparel to NBA to hockey to baseball. And then I just grew the business from there. And, you know, as my business grew, I needed a partner that I could scale with. And G3 Apparel was the largest outerwear manufacturer in the world at that time. And so we partnered and we just started to build a business. And it is where it is now as one of the top licensed apparel companies in all the sports.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. That's great, Carl. So even when you were on the field, I think that's great. The minute you got into the locker room, you were already working on life after football, and you've been so successful. And that's why, again, we thank you for joining us on the podcast. One question I wanted to ask you, you're one of the few players on the 1980s all-decade team that isn't in the Hall of Fame. Now, you were a finalist last year. Just what would that mean to you, Carl, if you do get that call? You know,
well, obviously, you know, to be in the Hall of Fame is the ultimate honor. And I would be lying if I said it wouldn't mean a great deal to me. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of that, I played on some great teams. I got the approval of some of the greatest coaches that this league has ever seen, the greatest player that this league has ever seen. So if I could play to a standard of approval from those guys, I feel like I've had a complete career. You know,
for sure.
It's again, Hall of Fame is what it is. It is the ultimate honor. But right. I think having, you know, the stamp of approval from the guys that, the Bill Belichicks of the world and the Bill Parcells, some of the greatest coaches that this game has ever seen, and Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson, you know, two of the guys that are the greatest that played this game. If I could meet their approval, then I can walk away from a career and say job well done and not stress it. You know, a lot of players really stress being in the Hall of Fame, and I do desire it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it never happens, there's no regret whatsoever about the career I had. And it doesn't feel incomplete by not being in there.
For sure. For sure. I think that's great. And the two Super Bowls help as well, especially your performance in the first one, Carl. So
I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, being a part of the Big Blue Wrecking Crew, which is one of the most iconic defenses we've ever seen. It's what made my dad become a Giants fan was because of you, Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson. What was it like playing with them? Because you were new, so they kind of had their own thing going on. Then you show up and then you guys form this crew. What was it like playing with them? And also, do you sometimes feel like you weren't appreciated enough by the fans because of them?
Mm. Wow, that's a good question. So being a part of that group, obviously you had to earn the right to be on the field with those guys because they practice at a level that I had never played at in college, right? So I knew that in order to get on the field with those guys, I was going to have to really be at my best all the time. And being at my best was just not good enough because the standard that Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson had for how defense was played or how the position of linebacker was played was just at another level. And that's why they're two of the greatest people to ever play this game. But I knew that I could do that and then some to really earn not only a spot on the defense as a starter, but to have an important role, to be able to dominate at what. I was out there, it was just like, I'm gonna dominate. I'm gonna be as dominant as necessary so that I could be at the level of those guys. So, you know, meeting their approval again, getting their stamp of approval, it means everything. It means that I am one of the best players to ever play this game.
Right, right, for sure. So we have about 10 minutes left. We don't want to keep you on too long because we know you're very, very busy. But I do want to talk a little bit about when you went to Washington, because now you see tons of guys always switching teams, but it wasn't a huge thing then. And you said that these guys hated you when you were there. Why was it? What was it, because like they're always going to see you as a giant?
Well, it was two things. Yes. First, it wasn't my choice to leave the Giants. They had a coaching change, and mm-hmm. Dan Reeves, who later said he regretted not re-signing me, wanted to go in a different direction. So I signed with Washington, and, you know, for me, I'm all about team. But for them, I was never really a part of their team. And I think it was because our rivalry with Washington was a little different. We saw it as a little different because we won most of our games against them. So when I walked in their locker room, I was the enemy, and they never accepted me as part of their unit. And, you know, frankly, I fought probably two or three times a week in practice. I mean, it was the worst experience ever because I wanted to be a part of the team. I was wearing their uniform, but there was just something about that rivalry that they never really got over.
Oh, okay.
For sure. Yeah. Like Jacqueline said, we're running out of time here, so we won't keep you much after this, Carl. The one final question I had for you is piggybacking off of one of the earlier questions. What kind of advice would you have to current players in the NFL for when they do leave football? You know, what avenues should they be looking at? Obviously, super successful yourself. What advice would you be given?
Well, they have the advantage of social media and the ability to brand. But I would say, you know, to any athlete, and a lot of people don't like that athletes are promoting themselves, but there is a way to promote it. And the thing is, for me, the game is what will propel you in your brand and help you build a brand. So the better you are at what you do, and it doesn't mean you have to be a star in the league.
Yep.
Take the game serious. Don't put your branding above the game. The branding should run parallel to the game, and your commitment to the game and being as good as you can be as an athlete will only enhance what you want to do off the field or off the court, because not every player is going to be an all-world guy. But, you know, the integrity of how you play the game, the effort that you put into the game is what fans appreciate. And I know the question was asked also, do I think I was underappreciated? No, the fans appreciated the work I do. And that's what helps me in my branding off the field and everything I do. So give the fans an honest day's work and they will reciprocate in their support for you and all of the other ventures that you have.
Yeah, and I think what you said, running parallel, I think we've seen a bunch of guys who brand themselves a little bit too much and don't match it with the play on the field, and that's where you can run into the problems.
Right.
Yeah. All right, exactly. So I think we're gonna end it here, but I do want to ask you one more thing to end this off. Just at the top of your head, what is one of the most greatest moments that you had playing football? Was it winning that first Super Bowl, second Super Bowl, getting your first sack? What was your what is, you know, top of your head best moment?
Big question.
Yeah, big one. Just top of your head, quick one.
That's an easy answer. Super Bowl 21, my first Super Bowl. Because, and I'll tell you why, because as a kid, you dream of having the perfect game. And, you know, when you just are in the zone, and for me, I had the perfect game in the perfect game. So I couldn't have played any better in that Super Bowl, and we won it. So to have a big game in the biggest game of the sport is got to be the ultimate for me.
Super Bowl.
For sure. That was an amazing performance by you in that Super
yes.
Bowl.
Yes. Yeah, so I guess we're going to end it here. Thank you so much for coming on. We still have so much that we would want to ask you, so we would love to have you back on soon. So thank you again. This is super, super cool for us as football fans. And I know for our parents, it's really, really cool because they got to watch you play. So I know my dad will be watching this. So excited. Thank you again. Yeah. And I'm Mark, anything?
We'll do it again.
Oh, yeah, for sure, Carl. We love to hear that. Like I said, man, you're super busy, so we just appreciate you taking this time and joining us. Thanks, Carl.
We'll do it again. Like, definitely, we'll do it again.
Awesome. Thanks.
Man. You have a great day.
Bye. Alrighty. Take care.